Yes, tonight there is baseball. Important World Series right here in our city, baseball. But if you're into it, you're probably watching that game. And let's not kid ourselves, most of us are all electioned out, except in bits and pieces. So what else is there to talk about tonight on the radio, my friends? Halloween. That's what. Halloween. Believed to originate from ancient Celtic traditions, All Hallows Tide, as it was once known, has taken many forms. The humble jack-o'-lantern, a mere tool to drive away evil spirits in the year ahead, and originally a turnip. And costumes, all part of outrunning misfortune's eye. Believed to be a night on which the veil between the worlds of the living and the dead was at its very thinnest, somewhere it morphed into a night of kids' stuff, a night of fun and mischief, costumes and treats, pranks and parties. But it's also a night when we all seem okay with talking about the things that go bump in the night. Things I suspect those ancient ancestors talked about plenty, maybe even openly. On this celebration of the beyond. Indeed, this time of year, it's not morbid to binge watch scary movies, and it's certainly not weird to talk about, say, mysterious footsteps we might swear we can hear in our own hallways. Whereas talk like that might be met with a little deeper skepticism another time of year. Halloween is the time of the year when we can, and perhaps should, more freely talk about the mysterious and the otherworldly, the things we try to understand and at least entertain the possibility that there's more to this world than what we can see and touch. Tonight, that's what we aim to do, discuss terrifying films we shouldn't overlook, how the lore around ghosts and haunted places has surprisingly impacted both politics and historic preservation, and we'll talk about visits from the dearly departed. I'll even tell you a couple of ghost stories of my own, a couple of them that happened right here in Tribune Tower, a building that's seen plenty of both history and emotion. I'm Amy Guth, and that's all coming up on the Saturday Night Special on 720 WGN.
Live from the biggest small town in America.
This is WGN Chicago, radio home of millions throughout Mid-America.
Radio, well, radio became the Pied Piper to a strange new world.
Time to climb up on our big shoulders and get inside our massive heart.
This is the Saturday Night Special with Amy Guth.
Tonight's show, my friends, is all about Halloween. Not the plastic, cartoony kids version, though. That's pretty fun, too. But the films, the ghost stories, and the spooky and mysterious themes that it conjures up. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to have some great guests joining us throughout the program to offer their insights on the topic, too. From the Onion's AV Club, Katie Reif will join us to talk about underappreciated horror movies. I know that's something I rather enjoy. I love to binge watch them. And we'll get a visit from psychic medium Melissa Tierney to talk about her work and her workshops. And author Colin Dickey will be joining us to talk about his fascinating new book, Ghostland, An American History in Haunted Places, that just this week, mere days ago, the New York Times called both intellectually intriguing and politically instructive. And of course, we want to hear from you all about ghost stories of your own a little bit later in the program. Esteemed producer Lise Graham will be the voice on the other end of the line when you call tonight, 312-981-7200 to share your comments throughout the show. But you can also find me on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat and all that good stuff to contribute to the conversation by social media. We'll be right back to get this Halloween conversation underway on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Thank you for being with us. I appreciate you for spending part of your Saturday evening with me. I know there's baseball going on and politics going on and all this stuff, but the other thing that's going on that is super fun to me is Halloween. So that is what we are talking about tonight, all the Halloween stuff. And what conversation about Halloween would be complete without a discussion of horror movies. Not one I want to be part of, that's for sure. I love to watch movies in my house by myself in the dark and scare the crap out of myself because that is super fun. But you know, there's the usual ones, right? Like I love The Shining and Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, and Christine, and Amityville Horror, and all those good ones. But there are so many. There are so many wonderful horror movies for many reasons. Sometimes they're so bad they're good. Sometimes they're just good. Sometimes they're creepy, crazy, whatever. But here to talk about those with us, those underappreciated and underloved horror movies, is Katie Reif. She is an editor at the AV Club, where she recently interviewed 10 horror movie directors and asked them for their recommendations for a 24-hour horror movie marathon that somehow I missed, but I will make it there next year or something like that.
It's running on Monday. Oh. It's an article running on Monday.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
You did not miss it.
Oh, good. I did not miss anything. We will all catch it on Monday together. Well, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming in tonight.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So I love that you share my appreciation of horror movies.
Oh, yeah. It's like, it's sort of my thing.
Excellent. We are friends already. So tell me about the ones that we should not overlook. Because, right, there's those ones.
Right.
I mean, I've talked about The Shining many times in this program because my parents were winter caretakers of a hotel when I was very little.
No way.
So when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's real. I know that fear. It was a very creepy hotel in the mountains, in the Appalachian Mountains.
Oh.
And I remember very clearly saying, like, I don't want to go in that room because it's scary in there. Or, you know, there's a man, and I don't remember this part, but my parents swear that I was like, there's a man in that room. And they're like, no, there's only us. No, there's a man. You know, little kids, I think, are kind of tuned in their own little way. So who knows what I saw? I honestly don't remember. Probably for my own good, I blocked it all out.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, you know, there's those great standards that we all love and watch. And, you know, I the other day rewatched Videodrome.
Oh, yeah.
Such a good one.
Yeah.
That's like a cult classic, that Cronenberg stuff, who always really gets and makes us. I feel like for every movie of his, you have to spend at least the length of the movie afterwards discussing what it could possibly mean.
Sure.
And all the symbolism in it.
Bodies are gross, I think, is what every David Cronenberg movie is about at its base.
Right. In summation, gross. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, so you have, because you have extensive horror movie knowledge, you have prepared for us a little bit of a list of some of the underappreciated ones.
I tried to pick some that were relatively recent.
Yeah.
Because things that came out and maybe got good reviews, but, you know, didn't make much of a wave and then just kind of disappeared. I also try to stick with things that are available either on Netflix or on the horror movie streaming service Shudder.
Mm-hmm.
So, any of these, you can stream them.
That is very nice of you, because so many times there are really great, super weird horror movies, but you got to have a friend in Germany to go buy it and ship it to you or so. You know, it's really hard to get the good ones sometimes.
I mean, as a film critic, I do have to feel obligated to give my speech about, guys, there's more movies out there that are just on Netflix.
Right, of course.
Netflix isn't everything, but
right.
I mean, that is how most people get their movie watching in these days.
Yeah. I mean, it is really about convenience, and certainly on-demand viewing has really changed a lot of our industry and reached out into many different areas of our industry. So
yeah. And one of the things I like about horror movies is that it's a relatively low bar to break into the genre. You can have a low budget, you can have an indie production, and you can still break through, which is one of the things I like about the genre. So these are all, you know, maybe a little smaller movies, independent movies, except for one.
That is kind of an interesting point, right? That it seems like with horror, I don't know that its audiences are more forgiving of budget and production value. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's that. I'm not sure what it is, but on some level, maybe there's camp involved that we kind of want in our horror movie.
You can play that angle. You can play, like, there's a Canadian group called Astron 6 that kind of specializes in deliberately campy, low-budget horror. They did one called The Editor that came out last year, which is a parody of Italian giallo 70s slasher movies, which is pretty fun.
Excellent.
But I think part of it is that it's a lot of it is about creating atmosphere and tension. And if you have a clever idea and good direction, then, you know, you don't need to have.
Right.
Listen, I love like a big budget effects scene as much as anybody. And I especially love practical effects, you know, like the goop and the gore and the blood. But you can create tension just with the simplest of elements. And I think there's something very, I don't know, it's poetic.
Lovely. I love that. So what are the ones, what are the films that we should not overlook?
Okay, so the first one I had, this one is on Netflix and it's also on Shudder. It's called We Are Still Here. This one was a pretty small movie, came out last year. Probably the biggest actor in it is Barbara Crampton, mm-hmm. who is in Reanimator and From Beyond and all those movies back in the day. She's in it. This is one of your classic haunted house, there's a curse on the house kind of movies. And it is a... if you're familiar with the movie The House of the Devil.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is sort of like The House of the Devil, only it has a slightly different sort of, you know, style that it's paying homage to. And that would be like your, like a Fulci movie, like a 80s Italian zombie movie, like that House by the Cemetery or okay. The Beyond. And so it's sort of, it's like that, but with way better acting and character development. So that's cool, but it doesn't skimp on the gore either. So okay. The first part of this movie is you have Barbara Crampton and the guy who plays her husband. They are going to they're going away. Their son has died. And so they're going to, you know, they bought a house in a small town. And they just want to start over and start a new life. But there's something in the house that the wife is convinced is their son. But... is it their son?
Right.
And then it explodes into some pretty cool, gory stuff at the end. I think if you're the kind of person who's always complaining about how come they don't make horror movies for adults, this is very much a horror movie for adults. I like the fun, teenage, goofy, campy stuff. Sure. But this one's very serious.
Excellent. Yeah. All right. The next one on your list is Unfriended.
Which, yes. This is a teen movie. I try to pick different kinds.
Yeah.
This one is more for teens, and I think a lot of people thought it was going to be really stupid because the concept sounds stupid. It is a found footage movie that takes place entirely on a computer, like a laptop screen.
Oh, interesting.
So what it is you have this group of friends who are all chatting, and there was an incident at their school the year before where someone had posted a video online of a girl at their school drunk and like embarrassed her and cyberbullied her, and she committed suicide. And so the whole thing takes place on this girl's desktop while she's group chatting with her friends and they're Skyping and things like that. But then somebody keeps calling into their group chat saying they're the girl who died the year before. But it's actually, the way it's executed is so clever. They do tension with, you know, like the spinning wheel of death
that you get on the computer. On the Mac, yeah.
It is like literally a spinning wheel of death in this movie. It's really fun.
Oh, that's very clever.
Yeah, they create a lot of tension with like the internet going out for a second.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. And that's how they keep the story moving, and they do the backstory, like two characters will be chatting and that'll give you backstory. It was just really cleverly executed, like fun idea for a movie. So
that's interesting, because a lot of times I think it's very hard to deal with technology mm-hmm. in film and books and things.
Right.
Sometimes it becomes kind of a cop-out.
Oh, totally.
You know,
and there are certain, you know, cliches that don't really work in horror movies anymore now that we have cell phones.
Right.
You know, why don't they call for help? Well, if you have a phone, then...
the phone's in your pocket, dude. Call for help. You
right.
don't need to run outside where the serial killer is.
Yes, you don't need to run through the woods.
Right. Also, don't run into the barn. Don't do that. It never ends well.
Never run into the barn.
Ever, as a general rule. The next one on your list is called Hush. Tell
us
about that one.
This is another... Now, if you like 80s, if you like the Halloween movies, if you like Halloween or Halloween 2, you will like this one a lot. Yeah. So this is a movie, it's made by a guy called Mike Flanagan, who actually has a movie out this week. He also made that Ouija sequel, Origin of Evil, which is actually pretty good, guys, believe it or not.
Worth doing.
Yeah. So what this one is it is it's one location. I think there's four actors in the whole thing, and it's only 80 minutes long. So it's very simple elements. This is kind of when I was talking about how you don't need, you know, the direction can really make a movie suspenseful and scary. I was really thinking about this one.
Okay.
Hush. And the concept is that it's about a woman. She's a writer. She's deaf. And she lives, she lives alone. And so she's at home at night. One night, and this, like, faceless, masked Michael Myers kind of killer just starts, you know, he, like, shoots a crossbow through the window of the house, and he just starts terrorizing her, and she has to defend herself.
Mm.
And that's like, the whole plot, but it's done really tight and really fast, and it's just really, like, it's a really hold-your-breath kind of movie.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah. We're going to be sure to put this list up on the website as we post the podcast, for sure, so that everybody can find all these so they don't have to frantically take notes right now. And the next one on the list is Behind the Mask.
Yeah. So this one, if you like the movie Scream and you like those sort of, like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge horror movies, you would love this movie. I'm surprised it's not better known. This one came out in a couple film festivals and then came out on DVD like 10 years ago.
Okay.
And not many people have seen it. It's streaming on Shudder, so you can watch it now. But it is very clever. It you know, like a Christopher Guest movie where he does the faux documentaries?
Right.
This is a horror movie mockumentary.
Okay.
And the premise is that this documentary crew is filming this guy, Leslie Vernon, from the title. He is he's an aspiring like psycho killer. He wants to be like Jason Voorhees.
Aspiring.
Yeah. He wants to be like Jason Voorhees or Michael Myers. He wants to be like a... He wants to slash some teenagers in the woods.
Sure.
And he invites a camera crew, you know, to help him become a famous killer. He invites a camera crew to follow him around. And as he, you know, tries to pull off a good old-fashioned horror movie... wiping out some teenagers.
Yeah, right.
And it's really, it's a lot like Scream in that it pokes a lot of fun at like cliches of slasher movies. And it's a lot, and kind of deconstructs them and uses them in clever ways, like incorporating them into the plot.
Excellent. Yeah. And the last one on your list is The Guest.
Yes, The Guest is a movie that it was made by a director who made a movie called You're Next, which is a little more famous. That was a bit of a Netflix success. But this one, not many people saw it. I was the only person sitting in the theater watching it on opening night, and I just loved it. So I think more people should see it. This one isn't a straight horror movie, but it is. It's sort of like... It sort of puts, like, a clever twist on the Terminator.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's a Terminator kind of thing, which you don't find out until halfway through that that's what it is. It starts off where there's this family that lives in Texas, and their son was killed in, I believe it was Iraq. And then this guy shows up at their house saying that he was their son's buddy from the platoon, and he wants to...
That old chestnut, the old, I knew the dead person thing.
Yeah,
right.
And he shows up.
And is the kind of dystopian element there from Terminator?
Not really.
Not so
it's more just like the, like, unstoppable killing machine aspect.
like Predator or something like that you just
like
can't
that.
Stop it.
Yeah, and so, you know, he's not... Who he says he is.
Of course.
Or,
as it
and
goes.
Then, so it's actually there's like a teenage daughter of the family, and she's like a total goth chick, and she's the one who's on to this guy. She thinks he's too perfect, that there's, you know, that he just can't be who.
The goth chick always saves the day.
Yeah.
Not just saying that because I was goth in high school.
So yeah, the goth chick saves the day, and there's a really cool sequence at the end that takes place in a haunted house.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us with this wonderful list. Again, we're going to put this on the website, and also you have a couple of bonus ones that we did not get to, so we're going to put that on the website too. My friends, follow Katie Reif on Twitter. She is an editor at the AV Club, super fun and super funny and filled with wonderful knowledge. Thanks for joining us.
I really like talking about this stuff.
Come back anytime.
Thank
all right,
you.
My friends, we're going to take a little break and get you to news and all that good stuff and be back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us tonight. Very honored you would spend part of your Saturday evening with me, especially because there's, I don't know, an important game or two going on a few blocks away. Whatever, it's all good. My friends, tonight we are talking all about Halloween. Not the kid version of it, right? Although that's super fun. We love that too. But we're talking about some of the things we don't get a chance to talk about the rest of the year, right? Because it seems kind of taboo or morbid or something to talk about, I don't know, ghosts and things like that the rest of the year. But this time of year, it is A-okay to do so. And so our next guest, author Colin Dickey, has written a fascinating book called Ghostland, an American history in haunted places, not of haunted places, but in haunted places. And it is a book that the New York Times reviewed this week and really pointed to its intellectual, you know, there's a lot of heft to it. There's a lot going on, but also like the political implications and how even historical preservation has been influenced by ghost stories. So joining us now, please welcome Colin Dickey. Hi, Colin. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, congratulations on the New York Times review. That's really a lovely, lovely review. And I love the very last line of it. It says that is both intellectually intriguing and politically instructive. That's so wonderful. And the thing that stands out to me about this book is really, it's not as much about whether or not you're even talking about whether or not ghosts exist or are real, but you're really talking about what the role that folklore and ghost stories really play in our country.
Right. I mean, I grew up in San Jose, California, so I grew up near the Winchester Mystery House. If any of your listeners know this place, it's sort of this sprawling labyrinth of a Victorian mansion. It's got 160 rooms, and it was built by the daughter-in-law of the guy who founded the Winchester Rifle Company. And the legend is that she thought her family was cursed by anybody who'd ever been killed by a Winchester rifle, and that the way to keep them at bay would be to build a house that was never finished. And, you know, I just loved that story growing up. But as I started to, like, look into the history and learn more, I started to understand the way in which that legend, in fact, was not didn't fit the historical facts as we know them. And so, I was sort of initially disappointed, but then I got more interested in that question of, you know, why did this story take root and why did it become so popular? And, you know, so that kind of launched me on this book of trying to understand, yeah, as you say, not necessarily whether or not ghosts are real or not, but more why the ghost stories that we tell about certain places have such cultural weight and what may be going on behind some of those stories.
So what do you think, what is it that draws us to ghost stories? Is it, do we want to believe that they're real? Is it, you know, I think there's some people who don't want to believe they're real, but still are fascinated by ghost stories. Is there anything that really stood out for you as a theme of places that you were researching that seemed like this through line of our fascination with ghost stories?
I mean, you know, I found a number of different themes that kind of kept cropping up in different forms and in different intensities. And, you know, I think that ghost stories in one sense are a way for us to kind of understand our own relationship to mortality. That was a thing I started to see a lot, as well as, you know, people, you know, loved ones who've maybe departed ahead of us, you know, and sort of keeping their memories alive, you know, sometimes through kind of talking about ghosts and things like that. But it also, I found it a really, in many ways, a really useful way to understand place and history on a very sort of micro level, right? I mean, if you think about history, I mean, you know, we're sort of raised to think about, you know, presidents and, you know, famous battles and things like that. But oftentimes the ghost story is a history of, you know, a house or a hotel or a graveyard. And, you know, a lot of these places, we don't really have access to the actual history of a place that small, and sometimes ghost stories kind of fill the gap in that regard.
That is very interesting. That is a really excellent point. I mean, earlier in the program, I referenced, we were talking a little bit about The Shining, and I said the reason why that movie is so powerful to me is because my parents were winter caretakers of a hotel. So I clearly remember being terrified of this giant empty hotel, but it somehow, knowing the spooky history of it, kind of led me to know the history of it. You know, because of the ghost stories, I know that it was built by hauling these boulders up the hill, and it a lot of construction workers did not survive its construction. And I know that it was, you know, it played a role in the Civil War and all, you know, all of these things. So I think that that's a very interesting point of how we almost learn bits of history based on based on the ghost stories that we know.
Right. I mean, you know, all of us have, I think, spent a lot of time in buildings that are, you know, far older than us, whether, you know, the houses we grew up in or, you know, the first house you bought or even just, you know, if you work in an old, you know, building. I mean, and so we all have that experience, I think, of living in these buildings that are, you know, they're anachronistic. They're maybe a little bit odd in their construction. You know, the floorboards creak. Maybe the floors are a little uneven. And yeah, I mean, those buildings, I think, really kind of, they have a presence and they have an aura about them. And I think that all of us spend a good deal of our time in such spaces. And so it sort of makes sense that kind of, I guess, sort of subconscious kind of way that architecture may work on us on a day-to-day basis. We would kind of turn to ghost stories and legends of hauntings in order to kind of make sense of that feeling that we feel sometimes.
Mm, certainly. I also think it's very interesting, the themes about women that come up so much in your book. Not only are you talking about Salem witches and links to, you know, the early feminist movement, but also how a lot of times the eyewitness accounts seem to be coming from women.
Right. I mean, yeah. Well, so I was talking a little bit about Sarah Winchester earlier and this idea that, you know, she was possessed by spirits and sort of made this crazy castle because she was, you know, maybe she was insane or something like that. And, you know, I mean, her infant daughter and her husband both died before she started building the house. And I didn't find any evidence that she was, you know, less than totally mentally competent. I didn't find any evidence really that she was a spiritualist, but, you know, but I did find evidence of a community that took one look at this, wealthy, idiosyncratic woman who was neither a mother nor a wife, and, you know, began to tell ghost stories about her. And I think that again and again, you find this situation where, you know, women who don't necessarily kind of fit the sort of, you know, misogynist roles that they're expected to fulfill, sometimes sort of their lives get written up as ghost stories. I found a number of, you know, spinster ghosts, as it were, you know, women who, for whatever reason, you know, never married, never had kids, and thus were, you know, thought to be sort of paranormally rooted to the house that they died in. And I think that is telling a lot about, you know, the way the certain anxieties maybe we have about the role of women in a society like ours that gets expressed through stories like this.
Very interesting, right? Because there's always so many of those stories about, I'm thinking in particular of like the waterfalls right outside of Montreal, where the woman in her wedding dress hurled herself, you know, threw herself off the waterfall. I think that story exists a lot of places about this ghost bride who, you know, couldn't bear to not marry this man, and so therefore she flung herself off a building. And that is interesting, right, when you put it in that context, certainly.
Right, yeah, I mean, and certainly in the South you find a lot of, antebellum, Southern Belle ghosts who are, you know, whose the man they were going to marry died in the Civil War, and, you know, they were sort of consigned to mourning from that point on. You find that same version with Revolutionary War, you know, fiancés in the Northeast of New England too. So yeah, I mean, it becomes a very common trope of this idea of, you know, what the woman who sort of doesn't fit the gender role assigned to her sometimes sort of returns in this kind of uncanny supernatural status.
Very, very interesting. Well, we need to take a little break, but I'm hoping you can stay with us a bit longer because I would like to talk to you about the place in your book, the Mustang Ranch, where you describe it as being the site with the strongest evidence of the paranormal that you encountered. So if you wouldn't mind hanging with us for a little bit longer, we'll be right back in just a bit. We're talking with author Colin Dickey. He's author of Ghostland, An American History in Haunted Places. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us tonight. I very much appreciate you spending part of your Saturday evening with me, especially because, you know, there's some stuff going on in the sports world here in Chicago, some major big deal stuff. And I know you have many, many options, but I appreciate you sticking with me tonight. And tonight we're talking all about my favorite, Halloween. lots and lots of good stuff, but not like the kids trick-or-treat kind of stuff and monsters and all that. We're talking about the stuff that maybe it's a little taboo to talk about the rest of the year. So right now we're talking with author Colin Dickey about his fascinating new book, Ghostland, An American History in Haunted Places. And it is a fascinating book because it's really not arguing whether or not ghosts are real or whether or not we should or should not believe them or whatever. What it's about is about the way the role of the ghost story plays out in our lives and in our country and in our history. And it's very, very interesting. Some of the themes that have emerged as we've been talking about how a lot of times, maybe if there's particularly women that don't necessarily fit this form of the wife and mother thing, that we might spin some yarns around her, right? She might be a little offbeat. She might be a little bit weird. We might talk about that as being that one lady, the crazy cat lady on the block or something like that, right? So it's very, very interesting, the things that are emerging from this conversation. You've given us a lot to think about already, Colin. But I want to ask you, too, about there was one site in which you described it as the strongest evidence of the paranormal of all the places you visited, and that was at Mustang Ranch, a brothel near Reno, Nevada. Tell us what happened there.
Yeah, that was a sort of funny story that I stumbled into. I'd gone there originally. I was sent by a magazine to do a story there. So to be clear, I was there as a journalist and not as a client, but mm-hmm. I was just killing time. The photographer was taking photographs, and I was talking to the madam who runs the place, and she mentioned, you know, quite casually, oh, you know, this place happens to be extremely haunted. And of course my ears picked up, and I was just talking to her about all the various things that she'd seen, and she sort of summoned one of the women who worked there, a woman who had claimed to have a sort of, you know, almost like a spirit familiar, a ghost that kind of, you know, stuck with her all the time, and, you know, told me that, you know, this spirit whom she named Baby, you know, really liked water, and so she got her, like, you know, like she got a little fountain for her room, and that seemed to make the ghost happy. And, you know, and then she showed me a couple of cell phone videos, and I tried to kind of keep a healthy skepticism throughout this whole thing. And I tried to sort of walk that line between, you know, outright, belief and complete skepticism. And I tried to sort of evaluate things as they came my way. And these videos, particularly the second one in which an orb seems to be floating around and her head in this video. And then at one point it sort of, you know, goes across the room and it hits her in the temple. And right as it hits her in the temple, she falls over in the video. It's sort of a very strange video that I really did not have a good sense of exactly what I was looking at. And she obviously couldn't remember, you know, what had caused her to lose her balance and fall over. But there was a moment when I found, you know, sort of difficult to easily dismiss this as, you know, a trick of the light or something like that. So that was an odd and fun experience, I guess.
Very, very interesting. Super interesting. I think that stuff is really fascinating because none of us really know, right? We can only just guess. So talk to me a bit about this theme of the role that ghost stories play in historic preservation. I think that's something that you encountered a bit in working on this book.
Well, right. I mean, you know, one of the things I found really interesting with, you know, with these various sites that I visited, and I began the book by, you know, just more or less Googling, you know, most haunted hotel, most haunted, you know, cemetery and stuff like that, and kind of built up a list of places to investigate and visit from there. And I was really fascinated to see the places that really sort of welcomed their, their paranormal reputation and the places that sort of downplayed it. And so there's a cemetery in Stoll, Kansas, sort of near the University of Kansas. And for years it had this reputation of being, you know, haunted. Supposedly the devil appeared every year at Halloween to, mourn the child of Satan who was buried there. And so, you know, every year the kids from University of Kansas would, you know, kind of descend en masse with, you know, a great amount of alcohol and, you know, just kind of tear up the cemetery. And, you know, finally the locals who, you know, for whom this is, you know, this is where their loved ones are buried. This is a sort of, you know, this is just a part of the community. You know, they basically had to recruit the sheriff to drive off these unwanted, hooligans who were, you know, more dangerous, I think, in many ways than any possible, you know, satanic appearances. So that was sort of an example of a place that, really sort of you know, downplayed its reputation. But there are other places that, as you say, I mean, it's particularly in places where there's a lot of development, there's a lot of demolishing of old buildings, that in some ways the status of a place as a haunted place can help bring in tourism and revenue. So, you know, the one place I visited was the Merchant's House Museum in Lower Manhattan, which is this beautiful old townhouse that's been preserved and has been turned into a museum. And there's always been stories of it being haunted, but it's really only been in the past, 15, 20 years that the management has really embraced this and started doing ghost tours and things like that. And I think in many ways that's because, you know, I mean, as you can imagine, Lower Manhattan, there are numerous developers, I'm sure, who are salivating at the prospect of, you know, destroying that lovely old building and putting up some, you know, terrible condo of some kind. So, you know, in sort of the more prime the real estate, the more fraught the location, that, you know, it's often the case that the building's owners will play up that kind of ghostly aspect, because I think it sort of helps bring awareness to a place. It helps sort of bring a new generation of people who might be interested in old buildings, and it kind of helps just sort of keep the vitality of the place alive a little bit.
It's really fascinating, you know, narrative not competing stories, but second stories, right? The many narratives that sometimes we overlook is a theme we talk about a lot on this show. And so this is really, really fascinating to talk about it in this context of how we think about ghosts and ghost stories. This is really wonderful. Everybody, the book is called Ghostland, An American History in Haunted Places. It is by Colin Dickey. Colin, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Everybody, go find this book and follow him on Twitter, please.
Thank you so much for having me on. This has been really fun.
Thank you so much. Everybody, go get this book. I will tweet out a link to it right after the program for sure. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break, get you to news, and when we come back, we have a very special guest coming in studio, so stick around on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. It's the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us. I always appreciate you spending part of your Saturday evening with me. I'm most grateful to you for that, especially because I know there's a little bit of sports going on in the world that you probably are watching, or maybe not. Maybe you turned it off at this point. I don't know. Nonetheless, I'm so grateful to you for being with us tonight. We are talking all about Halloween, one of my very favorite things to talk about. And, you know, we're not really talking about like the kids part of it, although that is super fun. But what we are talking about is the stuff that it seems like it's kind of taboo to talk about the rest of the year, right? It seems like this time of year is the only time we really can talk about that stuff without getting weird looks, right? I say nonsense. I say we should talk about this stuff all the time. We should all embrace the stuff that we're always questioning and wondering and thinking about, right? So joining us now is Melissa Tierney, who is a psychic medium. You can read all about her and her work at crystalclearinsights.com. Welcome to the program, Melissa.
Well, thanks, Amy. It's wonderful to be here.
I'm so glad that you're here. Thank you for braving Chicago tonight while there's Halloween stuff going on and Cub stuff going on and all that good stuff. Well, so, you know, I think it's interesting. It's like this time of year is when we think about, you know, things like tarot and palm reading and psychics and stuff like that. But really, it's an all-year sort of deal.
It is an all-year sort of deal, and I am busy all year. When I was little, I'm 58, so when I was little, the only time that I could find things that related to the things that I was interested in was Halloween, just like you said. And just like Colin was saying with the book that was just on, I would look for haunted locations, because you could always get a book that was geographically about, like, the ghosts of Gettysburg or mm-hmm. the ghosts of Britain, but you couldn't really talk about stuff. And we were grouped in with, you know, I had abilities from the time I was little, so we were grouped in with mummies and witches and all that stuff.
Right, right. And kind of given, I think there's a lot of, like, false narratives or assumptions around
yes.
a lot of that.
Yeah.
So tell us about the work that you do.
Well, a lot of people would like me to be a fortune teller, but I am an intuitive, I'm psychic, and I coach people in their life because I can intuitively see where they're blocked in their life and if they're telling me the truth or not. And so we can get right to the crux of whatever it is that they're not able to manifest in their life. And so by using my intuition and my abilities, I can, and my mediumship abilities, I can, if they're blocked because they have unresolved issues with a loved one that has crossed over, then I can have conversations with the loved one and bring them in when the person's ready. And it's just kind of whatever spirit tells me a person needs.
So this time last year, we had somebody on the program who did similar work, and we had a very interesting conversation about the ethical part of it. And that in the and after the program, she said, "Well, we talked about ethics. I have a message for you. Do you want to hear it? I normally don't even ask. I normally wait to be asked. Where do you fall on that?"
I have guides that I work with. spirit guides, and they tell me when someone is ready to hear something. And I also, I have very good boundaries. I believe that boundaries are a very important thing psychically, telepathically. I don't read someone's mind. If the things that I'm seeing are a little too detailed, you know, I'll back off of that a little bit. I don't want to know too much about somebody. But I believe that if somebody has come to me, that they're giving me permission to look into their soul path, and I don't ever, I'm not like Teresa Caputo, I don't go out and just like, hey, guess what, your grandpa's there. Because not everybody agreed to believe what I believe in this lifetime.
That's an interesting point. I think I've thought that before. I've watched that show, that Long Island Medium show before, and because I think this is a very interesting topic. But I've always thought that would be so jarring. You're out to dinner, especially when it looks like it's a date or something, and she just kind of walks up. She's like, hi, I realize this is a first date, but I got to tell you something about your grandma. Like,
exactly.
This date got maybe a little awkward, or maybe really good, right? Right. And so for you, if someone comes to you for a reading, what is that process like?
When somebody first comes in, I ask them what area in their life they are looking for change in. And abundance is abundance of all kinds. It isn't money or good health or good relationships. Abundance is is abundance, and so it is a flow. And if you're in the flow, you're in the flow of all of that, joy, health, everything. And so usually people come in because they're struggling, they're stuck, they need information. I've culled out over the years. I started out with California psychics, and all those people basically wanted me to do a spy. And I wouldn't do the psychic spying. And so when somebody...
What does that mean, to psychic spy?
Oh, you know, where's my boyfriend?
Oh.
who's he with now?
Is he cheating on me?
Yeah,
or whatever? Okay.
Right. Is he at her house now? And I wouldn't do it.
Right.
Because usually if somebody comes to you and says, is somebody, you know, cheating, their intuition has already told them something, and they're just looking for validation.
You're answering your own question.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when people come in... they want to change something in their life, and then I use my psychic abilities, my spiritual teachings, the knowledge that I have of the law of abundance, and whatever else it takes to kind of help them move forward. And it usually involves a lot of self-love. So I would say the crux of my work is teaching people to love themselves and forgive themselves.
Very important stuff.
Yeah.
Which is easier said than done, for sure. But
yes, it's a process.
Something that's important for us all, indeed. My friends, we are talking with Melissa Tierney, who is a psychic medium. You can read about her work at crystalclearinsights.com. We're going to take a little break and continue this conversation here in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us this evening. I know you have many choices of things to watch and do and cheer for, let's say, tonight. So I appreciate you spending your time with me. Most grateful to you for that. We're talking all about Halloween stuff tonight, but not in the kids' way, right? We're talking about the things that maybe are a little too taboo to talk about the rest of the year. And so this is the time of year we talk about it. A little bit earlier in the program, we were talking with Colin Dickey, who's the author of Ghostland, an American history in haunted places, all about kind of the narratives around ghost stories and how we think about ghost stories as attached to place and history and on all those good things. And right now we have Melissa Tierney in the studio with us. She is a psychic medium, and we're talking all about her process and her gift and the work that she does. And of course, we're taking your calls, 312-981-7200. If you have a question, we're not necessarily going to give a reading over the phone per se, but she's happy to answer some questions if you have them. So my friends, let us continue this conversation. So Melissa, you also do some workshops kind of about a lot of things connected to this and to these readings. Tell us a bit about those, if you would.
I do workshops for abundance. I do them for energy. We're going to have a gratitude class in November, and it's really about honoring the Native Americans and what they have taught us and the how they use their intuition in their everyday living. And it was just a very natural thing. They didn't consider it unusual. And gratitude is a huge part of what I teach. It's funny because there's the spiritual aspect, but then there's also, you know, the ghosts and the clearing of haunted spaces. Mm-hmm. And it all kind of ties together, though, because, again, the common denominator is love. And even if somebody is dead, or what we would know them to be as dead, they still have healing that they need to do. And so that when we're clearing or cleansing a space, it's crossing people over, but teaching them the self-love so that they can ascend to the light. But in the workshops, I teach things like how to develop your intuition and how to connect to the light and not be connecting with lower vibrational things, how never to use a Ouija board, how to protect and cleanse your energy wheels, your chakras, your aura, and understand that you're an energy being on the earth plane.
So you say no Ouija board, and I bet you a bunch of people just went, wait, what? Why not a Ouija board? Tell us why not.
Because it opens a door. You would never invite a stranger into your home, so don't invite
any stranger, living or dead, right?
Exactly.
Noted, right? Everybody take note of that. So in your work in helping people develop their intuition, I think that's a really interesting. I mean, personally, I believe we all have intuition. And I think, you know, if you watch a baby or an animal, mm-hmm. right, they know who's a creep.
Exactly.
They know who's good.
Yes.
I think we all have a story, right, of a baby or an animal, like following something around a room that we can't see,
yes.
right? That happens
yep.
all the time.
Yep.
And it seems to me like, you know, certainly none of us are going to know for sure what's after all this until we are gone and part of it. But certainly it seems to be logical to me anyway, that we all are born to be, you know, pretty intuitive beings. And it's as we grow up and get told that something is weird or creepy, that's when we kind of like shut it down a little bit and start mm-hmm. kind of raising an eyebrow about these sort of things. Do you believe that too?
That is exactly correct. It's our birthright to be intuitive. In other cultures, it's perfectly normal to be intuitive and to use your abilities and to even be telepathic. Look at some of the indigenous peoples of other countries that use their telepathy to communicate. I'm drawing a blank on the one tribe that I did some research on. But children are very, very connected. They will tell you when they see, you know, grandma that was alive.
Mm-hmm.
They can tell you who they used to be. Or, you know, remember when I was your mommy, they'll say. Excuse me, to their own mother. I see it. I was a children's art teacher before doing this. And the pictures that they would draw were of people that they could never have met. And they know things, but it gets trained out of you. It has been trained out of Americans. If we look at the history of the Puritans and you know, the hanging of witches, you didn't want to have a better farm than somebody else. You didn't want your cattle to be doing better than someone else, because then you were probably cohorting with the devil and you might be hanged.
Right.
So intuitively, we knew how to take care of things and heal things, but it became not safe.
Right, right. It's kind of some of the same themes we were talking about with the last guest, with that author,
exactly.
About how kind of this idea of labeling something as weird or taboo as a means of social control.
Yes.
Which is really, really fascinating.
Yeah.
So we have a caller. Hi, Bridget. You're on WGN.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. You have a question for us?
Yes, I do. You know, thank you for taking my call. I've lost both of my parents, and it's been very, very difficult. And I don't know that I have necessarily a specific question, or I guess I was wondering maybe if you could speak to the grieving process.
Mm. That's a good topic, Bridget. The grieving process is actually an energetic change that takes place when your loved one is no longer on the earth plane. And we perceive that and have been taught to feel that as something that's negative and something that's sad and devastating. But if we can trust and believe that they really are still around and are in some form somewhere, we will be able to communicate with them and we can interact with them. I have many clients and relatives who have complete relationships with their crossed over loved one. You know, we don't take the time to visit with someone when they're gone. So just like you would go and visit with your mother for an hour on a Sunday afternoon, you have to actually make time for someone who is deceased to hear what they're saying and to talk to them and maybe write them a letter and listen closely for the answer that they're giving you.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much for the call, Bridget. Have a great night.
Thank you. You too.
Well, that is an interesting, it is a great point, right? Because I think grief it's a part of life. It's something we're all going to encounter at some point. But you mentioned this the messages. How do you listen for those? And what do you know? Because I think the skeptic would say, you know, oh, someone's reaching or they're looking for a sign. You'll find it if you're looking hard enough. Right. But like what,
right.
You know, if you're really wanting that kind of comfort and you're really looking for and you're open to that kind of thing.
Yes.
What is that form? What is that going to take?
It is a relationship with a different form of energy. So it's still your loved one, but they can't interact with you in the way that they used to. And so you have to retrain yourself. My mother and I have a standing date every Christmas Eve, and my mother's been gone for 9 years now. But I will ask her to put in my mind, I'll lie in bed and I'll calm my mind and I'll breathe deeply. And I'll say, Mom, show me a memory that I don't remember from a Christmas past. And sure enough, some really ridiculous thing that I never remembered that is not in my conscious mind will come to me. And I know that that is not from me.
Hmm.
And you know, some people may say, some psychologists may say, well, you know what? It is from something inside of you because you experienced it yourself. But isn't it more wonderful to think that your loved one is with you?
Certainly. Certainly is. My friends, taking your calls, 312-981-7200. We're talking with psychic medium Melissa Tierney tonight on the program. We're going to take a little break and get you to news, come back and continue this conversation here in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us this evening. Of course, we're taking your calls at 312-981-7200. And right now we're hanging out and talking with psychic medium Melissa Tierney, all about the work that she does. And, you know, not everyone is going to believe everything or want to entertain every idea. And we're cool with that. But, you know, as always on the show, I just ask that we enter into conversations thoughtfully and with an open mind, of course, right? We had a caller just a bit ago who was feeling a little bit shy, didn't want to be on the air, and that's quite all right. I respect your right to do that, who wanted to know, Melissa, about the work that you do as a psychic medium and whether or not you're connected to any particular religion.
I am an interfaith minister because I wanted to have a strong background in the culture of all of the people that come to see me. And I also perform weddings and stuff. And so because people that don't necessarily belong to a church but are spiritual are looking for a spiritual teacher. And so I am a spiritual teacher, probably number one. But I am associated with everything. I myself identify with Christianity, but I am an interfaith minister.
Okay. There we go. I hope that caller got his answer. Wonderful. Well, my friends, I promised you ghost stories earlier in the program, and ghost stories you shall get. And I think we both have a couple. Is that right, Melissa?
Yeah.
You know, but I would like to tell a story that happened to me a couple of years ago. I have worked in this building in Tribune Tower in some capacity for a number of years, and I've had some pretty weird experiences here because, you know, this is a building with a lot of history in it and with a lot of high emotions. If you think about newsrooms, right, there's a lot of stuff that's happened here and a lot of strong feelings about it. And then outside the building, there are pieces of other buildings. Embedded in the facade of this building, there is like a piece of a pyramid and a piece of like Edinburgh Castle and all this stuff. So I think it's like...
And Native American under that.
And fire rubble under that. Because after the Great Fire, all the rubble... Basically, Streeterville is built on top of fire rubble. So we've got like, it is a little time bomb like activity over here for sure. And I say that who's someone who has lived in this neighborhood before too, where I thought, you know, I had some interesting things that used to happen in my house over here in this neighborhood that certainly went beyond just a bump in the night. There was some weird experiences. But here in this tower, I had a couple of experiences I wanted to share. And of course, my friends, I would like to hear from you. I know you're always good for some excellent stories. 312-981-7200. We've heard some really good ones on this station before. But a few years ago, I was doing some overnight radio and I got off my shift at 2. And so I was upstairs on the 7th floor waiting for the elevator. And I was talking to my producer, and I'm so glad she was there with me because I have a witness to this that I wasn't making it up. But we're standing there talking. It is 2 a.m. There's the only other person here is security. There was someone on the breaking news desk inside the Tribune on the 4th floor on the newspaper floors. And then an engineer who was up on the 7th floor. But we knew he was inside and not over where we were because we had just said goodbye to him.
Yes.
And we're standing there waiting for the elevator, and the door behind us pops open and slams shut really quickly. And there's a lot of people have said right there on the 7th floor that there is a presence there, particularly centering around what is now a women's bathroom. But apparently it used to be something else. But apparently there's a presence there.
Well, they
like
the water.
Oh.
You'll find spirits hiding out in bathrooms. And it's not so much what you see or what you hear, it's what you feel. And so a door might slam, but you felt and knew something.
We felt like we got punched in the face. I grabbed my producer's wrist and we took off running right away to the elevators on the other side of the floor. I was like, we are not even going to stand here and find out what is about to happen. Not doing that. That's interesting that you say that about water, because what a lot of women say about that particular ladies' room is that you'll be using the facilities and it's like someone is smoking a cigarette right by you and like blowing smoke at you to let you know of all moments you're being watched.
Yes. Right? There are a lot of haunted bathrooms in Chicago.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Another experience that I had here in Tribune Tower was... There is, when I was working for the Chicago Tribune, there is an area of the 5th floor where it's a long, long hallway with a glass door at the end of it. So you can see if someone's walking behind you in that reflection.
Yeah.
And I was here late at night putting my section to bed and getting it typeset and sent off. And I'm walking and I see a man behind me, which wasn't weird. I hadn't worked there very long at the time, so I didn't know everybody. So it wasn't a big deal that I didn't recognize him. You know, and I walked through the door and I held it behind me. I'm looking at my phone. I'm holding the door, waiting for him to grab it. I turn around.
Oh, boy.
There's no one back there.
Oh, boy.
There's a little break room. And so it spooked me. You know, I mean, I had chills because it felt off.
Yes.
And I poked my head in that break room. Not a soul. And I was like, I'm out. I'm done.
Yeah.
I And I left very quickly, and I think security wanted to, oh, hey, how are you? I was like, gotta go, gotta run.
Yeah.
But it really, you know, I'm open to that kind of thing. I think that kind of thing is very, very interesting. And indeed, none of us really know what's going to happen until we're on the other side. But that one kind of spooked me because he was right behind me in
you could feel him reflection. Right there. Yeah.
It was really quite creepy. Hi, Caroline. You're on WGN.
Yes, I want to know if I should listen to my dreams.
I think you should. Melissa, what do you think?
It depends on what your dreams are telling you. A lot of times they are puzzles that your unconscious mind is putting together to give you a message, and it's up to you to decode what they're saying. If they're very literal, like I had a dream once that I couldn't put my foot down on the brake, and my brake was out, and the dream seemed very, very realistic. And so when I was driving the next day, I was very aware of that dream, and I made sure that I kept a safe distance from all the other cars, and sure enough, my brakes went out. So Ooh. It depends on what you're being told.
Wow.
Well, I'm being shown a person in my dreams, and it's nobody I'm close to, but it's an acquaintance type friend. Somebody you knew in the past.
Someone you knew in the past. Mm-hmm.
Like in school.
Well, they might show up.
Oh, okay.
Well, maybe look them up.
So,
maybe.
It could be.
Could be. Well, good luck, Caroline. Thanks for the call.
Well, thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a great
Bye.
Night. Hi, Shelley. You're on WGN.
Hi. How are you?
Hi.
Good. I just had to share my story with you. So, I'm 59. My mom was 85. We knocked heads our entire life. On August 8th at about 10 o'clock in the morning, she passed away. On September 8th at about 9:30 in the morning, I was rear-ended by a semi, pushed down the highway, spun off into the ditch. About $8,000 worth of damage to my car, but I was not hurt at all.
Wow.
Not at all. I go to the police station to pick up my police report. I give them my number. They said to me, Martha? I said, no. They said, yes, you're Martha, right? I said, no. They said, Martha. I said, no, I'm Shelley. They go, oh, the driver that hit you's name was Martha. My mom's name was Martha.
Oh,
wow.
Wow.
Okay.
Shelley.
She totally got the last word. I'd had an argument with her the week before, and telling her she had to continue walking and pushing through, or she would be in a wheelchair and be in a nursing home. She got super angry with me. And I left on a business trip, came home as she passed away, and I think she just wanted to get the last word in with me. I think she wanted to let me know she was still there.
I think she was protecting you.
She was protecting me, absolutely. But I also think she was, you know, I said out loud, Mom, Dad came back as a butterfly. You could have come back as a shiny penny or a rainbow or something, but you came back as a Peterbilt in the side of my car.
Semi-truck.
Really? Really, Mom? Really?
Wow.
You know?
Shelley.
So, she protected me, but also let me know that, you know, she was still with me.
Wow, that's quite a story. Shelley, thank you so much for sharing it with us.
You're welcome.
Have a great night.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks. Wow, that is really, that gave me the chills a little bit. That's quite a story. And then as she was telling that story, I don't know if you heard that too, Melissa, but there was a loud pop. There was something happened in the studio just now. You heard it too, Lise? Yeah?
Yeah, I heard that. I thought somebody clapped.
I thought it was like floating in the air right here.
It sounded right here in the air above us,
exactly.
This loud pop.
Oh my gosh.
All right. Well, I've long said this building is filled with stuff, and of course it realizes, oh, it's safe to show up because we're talking about this. Let's do this. Indeed. Well, my friends, we're going to take another break real quick. When we come back, we're still going to keep hanging out with our good friend, psychic medium, Melissa Tierney. We're talking about ghost stories. Thank you so much to those of you who have called in to share yours. We'll take a few more. 312-981-7200 if you're willing to share. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Love that jam. That's a good one. We got to let that one play for a minute. It's good fun. My friends, It's Amy Guth on the Saturday Night Special. Tonight, we're talking about Halloween stuff, but we're not talking about like the kids' version of Halloween stuff. We're talking all about the stuff that's maybe a little too taboo to talk about the rest of the year, right? We're talking about, right now, we're talking with our good friend Melissa Tierney, who is a psychic medium, and we have been telling some ghost stories that are so fascinating. And thank you, callers who have called in to share some of your own, because they are really fascinating, especially that last one from Shelley about her mom coming back as a Mack truck, because that's not a thing we want. But, you know, on the break, Melissa, you were telling me that you have a really interesting ghost story of your own, but it involves Wrigley Field, which is kind of up right now and very topical and newsworthy.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know until... you know, we're in the World Series now, that the last time that we were in the World Series was 1945. And the first time that I went to Wrigley Field, I have a hard time being in large groups, and I have a hard time being in historic places. I have to take it in small doses. But the energy in Wrigley Field was so wonderful, and I was just so excited to be there, and I could feel the history all around me. And as I was standing in line on one of those ramps to go up to the seats, everyone around me turned into people from the 1940s. And there was a woman with a white dress with big red polka dots on it, and she looked like Lucille Ball. She had a darling hat on and really cute shoes. And all of a sudden, I had like slipped into a fold of time, and I was there probably in the warmer months, right as we were heading to the World Series in 1945. It was really, really fun. It's more what you feel than what you see and know.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. And what is the emotional impact on you when you have those experiences? Is it draining or is it exciting?
Oh, it felt so exciting. I felt like I was someone who was there on a date. I felt like I was going to have some Coca-Cola. It was just a really, really fun, wonderful feeling. Yeah.
How interesting. Well, I love this kind of stuff. And again, 312-981-7200 if you would like to share any of your stories with us in the time that we have left. You know, we were talking a little bit about this building and some of its interesting history, but I think there's something about Chicago, right? Like the fire, I think, put a layer of something on this city that already kind of puts a little bit of a believability about there just being something creepy or interesting or weird. You know, I think the Eastland disaster, you know, I think we talk about the Harpo Studios that is now no longer.
Yes.
And I think it was a nightclub over, I can't remember what it was called, Excalibur. I think that had a big reputation. Both of those were part of.
Yeah, they're always seeing spirits there.
It's really interesting. There's so many books written about just the haunted history of Chicago. And I think it has a lot to do with, you know, the different groups of people that have lived here at different times and the struggle attached to the city and even before
and
it was a city.
Yeah. And then the gangsters.
Yeah.
All of that. Interestingly, I did a cleansing and a clearing of spirits that were interfering with the prosperity of a certain major store right here on Michigan Avenue. And I was asked to come in and reset the energy.
Interesting.
I thought it was very progressive of them. But when I was asking Spirit what I should do to cleanse and bless the space, I was told that I needed to make amends with the Native Americans.
Mm.
And so I brought a whitefish, some feathers, and some tobacco, and we made a little offering to them. And then one of the people at the store was doing research on what had been their property, and it was actually the spot. The Native Americans had this whole stretch of lake for trading, for fur trading, and trading with the different settlers, and it was reduced to a little stall right where their store stood.
Oh, isn't that very interesting?
Yeah.
How fascinating. I love this kind of stuff, my friends. Hi, Eric. You're on WGN.
Hi. I'll be as brief with this story as possible. I happen to be an undertaker for a living, but it's kind of an unrelated story. I have an older sister who lives up in Wisconsin who had a 17-year-old daughter who was killed in a car accident a number of years ago. She has another daughter who has a little guy who's probably 2 or 3 years old, and he was playing in the driveway with one of those motorized cars. and he was halfway down the driveway, and he just stopped dead in his tracks. And his mom looked, and she said, well, what's the matter? Are you stuck? And he goes, no, I'm scared. Mm-hmm. And she said, scared? Scared of what? And they're in a heavily wooded area, you know, and he pointed out to the woods off the edge of the driveway, and he goes, the lady. And she went and looked, and here was a figure. It was like a textbook ghostly figure of a woman that you could literally see right through. It was just like something that you'd see on an Alfred Hitchcock movie. If they wanted to make a ghost, that's what she looked like.
Wow.
And she appeared for about 10 or 15 seconds, and then, you know, and they were both absolutely petrified, I mean, to the point of paralysis. And she had enough enough wherewithal to pick up her son and run back into the house and say, Mom, there's a figure of a lady outside. And then, you know, her mom went thinking, well, maybe it's the ghost of my deceased daughter, but the figure had vanished.
Hmm.
It was very spectral. You know,
sure.
It was extremely unnerving to the family.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting, though, how little children just blurt that out? Like, they don't know what to think about. They're like, there's a lady.
Yep.
There we go.
Right. And you know what? In the line of work that I'm in, I haven't really seen anything except angelic type of figures, which is good. But I haven't seen anything that you'd see in a, you know, an Alfred Hitchcock movie or anything like that.
Because you're doing healing work.
I sure hope so.
That's really interesting. Eric, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate you sharing that story with us.
Well, thank you very much.
Have a good night. My friends, I appreciate all of your calls and text messages and tweets and all that good stuff, but I'm afraid we are running out of time. Thank you to all of my guests, Katie Reif, who is an editor at the AV Club, who came in to talk about horror movies. Again, we are going to put the names of those films on our website with the podcast, so you can be sure and check them out. And then we talked with author Colin Dickey about his fascinating book called Ghostland, An American History in Haunted Places, that is really taking a look at this idea of ghost stories as sort of social control, which is really fascinating because I know that narrative is a thing we talk a lot about on this show for sure. And of course, thank you to our in-studio guest, psychic medium Melissa Tierney. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Amy. This was so fun.
Thank you. And everybody, head to crystalclearinsights.com to get in touch with her, to learn more about the work that she does, her workshops, all the good stuff. Thank you so much. So lovely to meet you and hang out
Thank
tonight.
You. Yeah.
My friends, again, there's lots of stuff that it seems like we can only talk about around Halloween time because it seems a little taboo the rest of the year. But you know what? As I always say on the show, let us have these thoughtful conversations with an open mind and just see where we land. That's going to do it tonight for the Saturday Night Special. I'm Amy Guth. We're going to turn things over to David Hoekstra here in just a bit after news. And we're going to take a little break right now on 720 WGN.